give you a little bit of background. You know, obviously, emergencies and disasters are something that can occur at schools and have occurred at schools in the past. And if that were to happen, it has the ability to affect a very large number of people at one time, and primarily children. These are just some examples of emergencies and disasters that have occurred in the past and had some direct or indirect effects on schools. Earthquake in Los Angeles in 1994, of course, the Columbine incident in 1999, the World Trade Center towers falling after 9/11 had indirect effects across the country as parents rushed to schools to get their children out, not really knowing what else may happen. And then the incident in 2004 in Russia, where a school was taken by terrorists and over 300 people were killed. Whoops. Drills are something that schools do conduct to prepare for potential emergencies or disasters. And these are just some photos of some particular types of drills that may occur. Earthquake drills are very common where I'm living in California. Tornado drills, common where I came from in Texas. Hurricane drills, where I used to live in Louisiana. You know, depending upon where you live in the country, there's different types of drills that, you know, may occur. And what we have found is that in the research that we've been conducting is that really drills are pretty much the only training that is provided at the schools directly. And we wanted to get an idea about how effective they were and people's perspectives on that. So drills are a way to put into action the plans and protocols schools have put together, whether they be cookie cutter or not. Many of them are, and from my experience as well. The California Education Code does require fire drills and earthquake drills and different numbers of drills, depending upon either for elementary schools and secondary schools. Some schools also require lockdown or code yellow drills for violent incidents in the community where the school is literally locked down. People cannot come in. People cannot go out. So again, as I mentioned, this is based on a much larger study that was working with two school districts in South Los Angeles. Mixed method study with quantitative and qualitative data collection. What I'm presenting today is based primarily on a lot of qualitative and a little quantitative from some drill archival data abstraction reports. Each schools are required to send in at the end of the year reports on the drills they conducted. That contains usually start time, end time, weather conditions, how many kids were there, and any other incident notes. As we noticed going through these, there was some suspicious data collection going on that for those suspicious records that looked like it was all done in one day and all the information was really oddly similar, those were removed. We also conducted one-on-one interviews with school staff and focus groups with staff and students, and also did several real-time drill observations of each type of drill. Just quickly, the research questions for this presentation are what types of drills are conducted, how often are schools drilling, and how do those actually compare to the California mandate, how quickly are students and staff evacuated from school buildings, and what are some challenges encountered. Okay, so for the types of drills that are reported and mandated, fire drills were the first that we looked at, and as you can see, hopefully on this graph here, elementary schools require about 10 fire drills per year in California. Middle schools require about 4 and high schools 2. From the data that we collected, we saw elementary schools on average were not meeting this standard. They were having about 6 per year. Middle schools were also not meeting this standard, having about 3 fire drills a year, and high schools had about 3 as well and surpassed their minimum. Earthquake drills, some different requirements. 4 are required for elementary schools, 2 are required for both middle and high schools. And again, you see elementary schools are not meeting that standard. And what we also saw is that obviously elementary schools have much higher requirements than the others. And so it's requiring them to get their staff together and get their children evacuate much more frequently. And secondary schools are much larger. Perhaps there's different challenges in doing drills with the secondary schools, which we'll see in a minute. So based on our observations that we did at drills and then also from the drill reports that we received from each of the 17 schools, we calculated an evacuation rate. We saw as an elementary school, they were able to evacuate students at a rate of about 58 seconds per 100 students. Secondary schools was more than twice that, at about 170 seconds per 100 students. And secondary schools have multiple levels where students are either coming up or downstairs, often very large campuses where they're going from different buildings trying to get to a central location. obviously it's going to take longer and usually much larger schools, several thousand students trying to evacuate at a time. That what a high school that we were dealing with in this particular district had almost 5,000 students. What was interesting is we can't really compare these rates with anything because we couldn't find any published data to really see, is this adequate, is this on target, what does this mean? So we're kind of hoping that we'll be able to find something to compare it to. So again, as I mentioned, we realized that drills are really the primary training that are going on at schools. And the interviews and focus groups that we conducted show that, you know, this is all that's being, that's all that's really happening, but people don't really see this as training most of the time. They see it more as something that they have to do. It's a requirement, but it's not something that they feel they're learning from. And their belief that, you know, this isn't enough, because what they're doing is they're telling us to, if the bell rings, we leave the building, the bell rings again, we come back in. But there's really nothing else going on. So this quote here is from a teacher at the, I believe, in one of the middle schools, saying, "We know where to go if there's an earthquake. We do drills at least once a semester. So we go out to the yard, then we come back. Other than that, I think we're halfway there with preparedness. Maybe I'm being generous. We practice each one of the techniques necessary to keep safe from falling debris or from buildings that are caving in. But other than that, they teach us to leave. Really nothing else." So we asked the teachers and the staff and the students, what are some challenges in conducting these drills? Some of the things that came up is the actual school infrastructure or layout. Again, having multiple buildings where people are having to traipse across several hundred feet to get to a central meeting place, maybe going through some narrow passageways, having a single exit or gate where students and staff are trying to get out. Often they saw congestion at these single exits or gates. It wasn't enough to get a large number of people out in a very short period of time. Students mentioned several times in different focus groups that they really feared a stampede. If something real were to happen, sure, everyone's calm now. It's kind of fun. Everyone's going out. They get to talk to their friends for about 10 minutes while they're outside. If there's a real fire, it's just going to be totally chaotic, and they feared that, you know, they would be trampled on the stairs or something. And this is from one. This is from a staff member, which is interesting. "I noticed during our fire drills, like a mob of kids squeezing through this tiny little hole, like between the gate and pole. Right now, we're all very calm, and actually, it's kind of fun. We get to get out of the class and go stand around. But when there's a real fire, people are going to be trampled because they can't get through the narrow little area." So staff and students were agreeing on this. Some other interesting points that came up were the supplies. Staff said they didn't know what supplies were there or where the supplies were, which indicated that supplies weren't ever being brought out to drills to check to see had expiration dates passed. Were things still working? Were the flashlights working? Did they have enough first aid? What was being used? So people weren't necessarily bringing the materials that would be needed in an actual emergency and disaster to the drill site. And another interesting thing that came up from many of the teachers at some of the secondary schools was the inadequate protective equipment. "All we know is to duck and cover, and to me this is not even good because these desks aren't big enough for all of our big boys. It just does not work for big kids, for 16-year-old boys. You ask one of them to get up underneath and see how well they do. They need to get rid of them. That's not right. I have some big boys, and if they just move a little bit, they take the desks with them when they take off." Some other challenges, broken emergency alert systems. Sometimes the bells would ring in one part of the building, but not the others. Very common. Classrooms without communication systems, particularly in bungalows that are separated from the main building. Many didn't have telephones. Many didn't have bells. And this was, we actually observed this during one of the observations. It was a lockdown drill. And the bell rang. Some staff were patrolling around the school to make sure all the doors were locked. Everyone was secure inside. And there was a building about 50 feet from the main building. I think it was the band hall or the music hall. And kids were going in and out, walking around. Obviously, they hadn't heard the drill. And none of the staff patrolling ever went over to correct that. So in the case of a real emergency, students in that building could potentially be walking around the yard, and there could be a disaster. Oops. Dysfunctional bells. Bells just going off when they don't need to, or not going off when they should. Also very common. And then, of course, student pranks or false alarms often desensitize staff and students to an actual real emergency, as this quote kind of illustrates. there's a frequency of ringing the bells at the high school. Sometimes the bells don't work there, sometimes they blink all the time, and teachers have become somewhat desensitized to the blinking lights and the ringing of the bells. It doesn't happen every day, but at least happens once a quarter where someone tampers with the bells because it's a high school campus. If someone touches or pulls it, it does not add to a sense of emergency because you once said, oh, there's just kids playing with the phone, so it isn't a sense of emergency. Some other things that came up was that drills didn't include the full school community. Lots of concerns about how parents would react in an emergency, but parents weren't ever included in the planning or in the drills. So they thought that this should really be communicated to the parents when drills happen, invite them to participate, because no school is in and of itself separated from the community it participates in, one staff said. And this is from a security guard saying, I'm concerned about adults. I always say I'd rather deal with 10,000 kids than 10 adults, because adults in their mind, they think they know what they're doing. When it comes to tense situations, I know what I'm supposed to do, and they're just in the way. In my experience, it's been adults are not very helpful unless they're trained and they can follow instructions. also, the idea that drills aren't addressing how people are actually going to react. It's a very plastic, unreal experience, and people aren't actually given roles or anything to do. They leave and they come back. So we know when the bell sounds, like we know to march out like little tin soldiers and go to the field in our appropriate places if we hear these sounds, but they never prepared us for what if. The one big earthquake can stop all of that. There could be no sound, the field couldn't be there, and then there's no loudspeaker and there's no bells, and what do we do now? We know what to do if the bells go off and they go down and walk to the field, but that's all very plastic, very phony for a real earthquake. And also they said that they couldn't really assess their own reaction or others' reactions, and this quote kind of took me by surprise. One of the teachers was speaking about the LA riots that happened more than 10 years ago, and she was at the same school, saying when it happened, I heard teachers saying, the heck with my students, I'm getting out of here. They're afraid. They became frightened, and they weren't acting like they would normally act. It could have been the most caring, sensitive teachers, and when there was really an emergency, they really freaked out. So the idea was that they really need to implement more realistic drills where people are assigned to triage, to the morgue, to search and rescue, and react out those roles. Make it a little more realistic. So in conclusion, drills have become very rote activities that provide a very minimum level of safety information and a very minimum level of practice for people involved. They're not used as opportunities to improve emergency procedures. The example of students not being able to fit under their desk, well, you could maybe ask them to go under a table or at least teach them to protect their heads, but that didn't seem to be happening. Debriefing allows for schools to self-evaluate. We asked to be invited to any debriefing sessions and none occurred. So that didn't happen. So yes, they need to debrief and use that information to improve upon what they're already doing. They need to do more realistic simulated exercises that are maybe district-wide, and parents are involved and given roles to play out and act out as if it were a real earthquake or a real fire. And again, more systematic accounting of the school drilling process. Some of the records that we had to throw out, it was obvious that someone at the end of the year had just filled that out without any real thought into what had happened, because there is no accountability system for the drilling. So I've put Marison's contact information up here. If anyone has any questions, I can certainly give you my contact information as well after this. Thank you.